to, I have a plague series that also post-apocalyptic slash coming of age that I've got in the works. But right now I'm working on book three of my second zombie apocalypse series. The series I'm working on right now, it's Steel City Apocalypse. It's set at the beginning of the zombie apocalypse, and it's set in my hometown, Pittsburgh, PA. And so that's been a lot of fun because I get to highlight a lot of the things that I like about Pittsburgh and the people here. And that's going to be a 5-book series. And then my my other series is The Undead Age, which is in the same universe. So it's the same zombie apocalypse, but it's set 10 years after. And I wrote that book first, or that series first. And so it's a completely different cast of characters. It's set in California, in the San Jose area, which is where I was living at the time. And that's a complete series. So if somebody, you know, wants to read it and they decide they like it, they can like read the whole way through. Whereas with this one, you know, book three is coming out next year, and we'll see how it goes with the other two. But my background, like by training, I'm a theologian. I went to grad school to be a Unitarian Universalist minister. So I have a Master of Divinity. Yes and no. But I decided ordained ministry wasn't where it was at for me.
In what way? What do you mean that it wasn't a big shift? How did you... What did it feel like to you?
Well, it took a good 10 years before I started writing after I graduated. But...
I see. Okay.
But you know, as a writer, you're always trying to get to the truth of whatever the conflict is or whatever the theme is that you're exploring. And, you know, religion and religious faith or spirituality, again, that's people trying to find a kind of cosmic universal truth that helps them make sense of the world. So, you know, it's not that different in that sense.
No, it isn't. And I mean, first off, what stood me out at the very beginning is that type of writing. Because, you know, anybody could say writing an apocalypse is easy. Not really. I mean, you know, you mentioned where you use references like, you know, your hometown and places that you've been to. But then the cool thing about apocalyptic, especially like books and thrillers that I love, is it takes you on this really cool adventure. And you meet all of these interesting people, but you have, in a way, the author's perspective in mind. Like, the author is giving you their perspective of what's going on. And I feel that's a difficult skill to obtain as a writer.
I would disagree, because I think the basis of any story is the basic conflict is, it's getting to the truth of that conflict, whether it's in a romance where like it's enemies to lovers, or it's a, you know, a space opera where you've got like galactic empires clashing. Because I mean, post-apocalyptic fiction, one of the things I like about it is that you have people in very extreme circumstances. And so obviously I can do things with characters who are, you know, in a really extreme circumstance, like the zombie apocalypse. I can really push them into these situations that are very, very extreme versus like, you know, a romance, you know, and that's a great place to play with things, because you can really get to the heart of like, well, what do people do and why do they do it? And, you know, what's the right choice or the wrong choice?
Right.
Or is there a choice, you know,
or sometimes you can run into the situations.
My first series, The Undead Age, the first book is Love in an Undead Age. My main character is a character who has, she has a really, really strong moral compass, But she has made some really, really morally dubious choices over the course of the book and in her backstory. And they're the kind of things that she never would have done had she lived a regular life and not had the experience of living in the zombie apocalypse. But she did have the experience of living in the zombie apocalypse. So her lived experience has changed her, you know, not just in terms of what's happened to her, but in terms of her frame of reference for what is necessary versus what is right is very different than it would have been otherwise, you know? So, and like, that's fun. Like I, you know, some people who've read my book, that they don't like that, you know, they want their heroes and heroines to always do the right thing. But I don't find that super interesting, you know, because getting people into morally dubious areas where they make maybe not the right decision, you know, you can really muck around and get your fingers dirty and have a lot of fun with that.
No, and I definitely feel that's important, you know, character development, especially seeing the story, reading the story, seeing how it unfolds chapter to chapter. It's exciting. It's really fun. You know, you from what you learn from the very beginning to what you finish at the very end, I always enjoy that experience because you never necessarily know what you're going to expect, even though, like, you may know what the story is going to be about, but there's always twists and turns.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes, you know, before I started writing, I would hear writers say, well, and then the character went and did this thing that I wasn't expecting. And I thought that was something people just said to, like, sound like writerly. But sometimes they do that. You know, you were planning to do one thing and then the character, you're writing it and that's not how it's being written. And you realize that, like, okay, what I had in mind wasn't right for the character, but, you know, as I'm writing it, I'm getting what's right. And it's not coming, I mean, yeah, maybe it's coming from me, but it feels like it's coming from the character. So,
well, I feel that especially in our minds, there's a deep connection between the subconscious, the back part of our brains, where there is information that's coming from there, especially when you're dealing with artists that we, in a way, don't know how to describe. Mm-hmm. The way that we create these stories, and the way sometimes I create progressions or songs or create art pieces, I know where it's coming from in my head, right? But can I fully explain it? No.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes you don't really understand why you've headed down a particular path. And I've also found that, like, you know, artists have such, even in the same medium, have such different creative processes. You know, like, I tend to think of myself as a real kind of nuts and bolts kind of writer. You know, like, I really like to write from an outline. I outlines, of course, change because as you're writing a story, you get a feel for the characters, you get to know them better. Sometimes you just have a great idea, so you incorporate that, you know. But, like, I always know where I'm going and where I want to end up. And, you know, and I approach it in a very kind of straightforward XYZ way. I have a friend who, like, experiences her creative process as information from the universe just being downloaded through her. And that, like, you know, it's something that's already done and it arrives fully formed for her to do, you know? And, like, I think that's cool, but I mean, I have, like, not a supernatural bone in my body, I swear. So, like, that's not my thing. And, like,
that's a good point, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And just like, you know, people like to talk about the muse and where their muse takes them and this, that, and the other. And you know, I understand the whole concept of the muse, but I honestly find it really annoying because that's not how I approach things. You know, I think there are two ways there's writing and there's not writing. And, you know, waiting around for some mystical inspiration to strike is just not writing as far as I'm concerned. So like, and I find that the more I write regularly, the more I want to write, the better quality of ideas I have. I have more ideas than I do when I'm not. And so, you know, so I approach it really, really pragmatically, which and very in a very concrete way. You know, I'm a really concrete kind of person. Like sometimes the things I miss because they're not concrete. I mean, like it's embarrassing, but like and my friend, like I talk about that, and she's just like, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, that makes no sense to me.
You know, you bring up an excellent point because there are different types of artists in the same, as you say, genre. Mm-hmm. You know, there are writers, like you said, that very nuts and bolts. They have the outline, the layout. There are types of writers that need to literally go to the jungles of India to actually write things. You know, and then you have writers that just need to be in a box. There mm-hmm. are people that will lock themselves in a room and that's how they write. But it all stems from creativity, right? Mm-hmm. They're all stemming to create something. So whether you want to label it mystic, there is a process that's going on in their brains that when they enter this mode, they're in that zone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the urge to create is just like one of the most basic fundamental things about human beings, you know, and, you know, whatever form it takes. So it's.
Whether mystical.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's a universal element of being human, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It really, I think every person when they start their craft, you know, whether it be, particularly when you talk about writing, there are many different avenues that people go. You know, not everybody goes to creating novels or books. Some people go to writing poems. People can go to be comedy writers or script writers or journalists, you know, and I mean, it's amazing to think that it all starts with somebody wanting to put words on a piece of paper.
Well, I think it's a little more fundamental than that. It's just people wanting to tell a story, you know, for whatever reason, they've got this story in their head and they want to share it with people. Or at least get it out of their head. And, you know, so I think that's where it starts. It's like, you know, you've got this idea of a story of these people or entities that you've never met, but you think you'd like to tell their story.
Do you want to walk us through your story process? You know, for example, when you are creating your books or writing?
Sure. Sure. And there's the dogs I warned you about. So,
oh, that's fine.
Yeah, I have.
They
I
add
have,
to the excitement and enjoyment.
Yeah, I have 7-month-old blue heeler mixed puppies, and they are zippy. They also want to be fed, and my husband's coming home. He's going to feed them, so it's going to be all kinds of mayhem. Well, my process with writing, you know what? I'm so sorry. I don't think he has his keys. Give me one sec.
Sure.
I mean, for me, it just... Like when I wrote the first book, you know, like I had been working, you know, as a
all about the artist. That is the whole purpose of this podcast, period. And you have a really valuable tool. You can share this with artists, people that are creative, someone that can enjoy this podcast and really enjoy the experience of Lost in the Groove. So with that, let's jump back to today's episode, shall we?
administrative assistant for a lot of years, and I didn't really like the work. I liked where I worked. I worked at Santa Clara University, which is in the first series. But I was like, okay, I need to quit screwing around. I need to like write. I've been talking about it forever. So I decide, but I was really intimidated by it. Like writing a book is a big thing. Like it's a book. That's a lot of words, you know?
Sometimes it's 300 pages.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so, you know, that was very intimidating. So I thought, well, I should write something that'll be easy to write. So I thought, okay, I'll write a chick lit book. Okay. Which the hubris is astounding, you know, as if that kind of book is easier to write than another kind of book. Books are hard to write. Doesn't matter what you're writing. So I thought, okay, that's what I'm going to write. It won't be hard. Ha ha. And my ideas were terrible because I don't really read that genre very much. Like I've read a couple at the beach or, you know, picked up a book in the airport because I forgot my book or whatever.
Right.
So my idea sucked. And I would tell my husband, hey, this is my idea. And he'd be like, that is pretty terrible. And I was like, yeah, so this is my idea. And he's like, no, I don't think so. So like we did this for about a month, you know, back and forth, back and forth. And finally, one day I was telling him my latest bad idea, and he was like, and I was like, too bad it can't have zombies. We just kind of looked at each other. I was like, that's what I should be writing. I should be writing a zombie adventure. So for me, again, like I tend to be like really very concrete. So for me, my idea is, you know, what's the setting? What kind of character do I want? What's going to be the fundamental conflict? What's, you know, and then, you know, who are going to be the people in the story? How do I, you know, hash it out? Because like over the weekend, he and I banged out a plot, you know, not an outline or anything, but a basic plot, you know, who's the good guys, who's the bad guys, you know, X, Y, and Z, how this is going to happen. So for me, that's how it worked with that first series. Now about, I don't know. I don't remember how far along I was in the book, but I would, and this is the interesting thing. Cause like other art influences your art. So I was listening to Mattis Yahoo a lot. And sometimes when I listen to music, I'll get stuck on a song and I'll just like put it on repeat and listen to that song. Wait a minute,
did you say Mattis Yahoo?
Yeah. I was listening to his Light album a lot. And anyway, and I was listening to We Will Walk. That was the song I was stuck on.
This is amazing.
Yeah, so I get stuck on this song the guy singing to this woman, and it does not sound like things are going well for them in this song, you know, like things aren't going well. And, you know, their ability to like live and be together really seems pretty poor. And so I'm stuck on the song. And all of a sudden I thought, wow, what if my character ended up with this person instead of that person? Which was completely not something I was planning, you know, and it changed the whole story. It changed the whole series, you know, and you know, and the person I wanted, you know, I thought, well, that would be cool. It was a bad guy, you know, and like that, I could not have her end up with this horrible person. And so, you know, my husband's like, well, you know, I don't, he's got to be good somehow. There's got to be something redeeming about him. But it changed the entire series. I was not looking for that to happen, but just listening to this song got something going in my brain. And then one day it was like, wow, what if this happened? So I guess I have a lot of what if too. Like when I'm laying out a story, one of the things I like to do is ask myself, aw,
this is my little squeaker.
Very cute. I love calicos. I had a calico. But I like to ask myself, what if? So, well, what if so-and-so did this? What if? And sometimes I'll get these big, long lists of what ifs that'll help me, like, figure out which one is the most interesting to explore, you know? So that's kind of a lot of how I do it, you know, but it is interesting because you never know what might influence you to change a story or to like want to start a story either, you know, and
an inspiration.
Yeah. Like inspiration comes, it literally can come from out of the blue, like a bolt from the blue, you know, and then everything's different, you know, or sometimes it's just even like a tiny little thing, but it's a little tiny thing that makes a big difference.
No, I, it's funny because I relate to this so well. When it comes to the little things, you know, the sound from the record player or the sound of the books, you know, when you're turning the pages, we tend to not notice things a lot of the times. And when you make that type of writing, and again, you're putting people in very extreme conditions, when you're in those extreme conditions, you really have to listen. Because it's life or death.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. I never thought of that. But yeah, you really do. You're blowing my mind.
Listen, that's the point of this podcast. But I want to touch on something you said earlier, because sometimes you get caught in this like box, what you were saying with your writing. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh, that's what I needed. You know, do you feel it was a limit, or did you know before that you wanted to do that? Or was it that just hit in the moment of like, oh my God, maybe I should be writing that instead?
Well, what should I be writing versus what? Well, you know, I think that was fear. The idea that I couldn't do it, that I was afraid, that was fear. And fear was dictating a choice. And good decisions never are made from a place of fear. Never. You know, I love the line from Dune, you know, fear is the mind killer. And it really is, you know. So yeah, so that was it. And it was kind of funny because when I said, oh, too bad it can't have, it was just a completely spontaneous thought, you know, a wish, you know, because I was frustrated. And then like there it was, you know, so because I was not thinking about writing Zompok at all. So even though I love that, and I love, you know, post-apocalyptic and dystopian fiction, because I just like seeing what people do, you know, and it's interesting. And why some people go the crappy route and some people go the better, what we think of as the better route. And, you know, sometimes people don't even know why they're doing it, or it's not even a conscious choice. It's just, this is just where they have ended up.
So, yeah. You know, it's funny because it kind of ties back to the story of like the origin of this podcast. I remember I was talking with my therapist, and I was just so tired of not having a place of pure communication, you know, open-mindedness and actual perspective. And she said, why don't you do something about it? I'm like, what am I supposed to do? You know, just pure fear of like, who am I? And fast forward 2 years, I met with somebody and I was telling him this exact story. And he's like, why don't you just do a podcast? I was like, okay, with whom? He's like, I'll do it with you. I was like, okay. And that's how it started. But instantaneous moment, you know, where it's like, oh, I never thought of that. There's an idea.
Yeah. Well, and it is amazing how, you know, we all get locked into our field of vision, you know, of, you know, our way of looking at things. So you do need people to pull the blinders off and widen your field of vision. And all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, I guess I could do that. That I didn't even think of that, but it's right there, you know?
Right in front of you.
Yep.
How have you felt personally, you know, your development with your writing since you started with the, you know, the chiclets, you know, and figuring out putting zombies?
Felt how?
In your writing, in your own craft, and how you developed your stories.
Well, I'm a better writer than I was when I started. You know, I was lucky in that right when I decided to start writing, a friend of mine who I didn't know was a writer was putting a writing group together. So, you know, and I was lucky in that it ended up being a really good writing group and I learned a lot. So I'm a better writer than I was. I'm a lot more confident about it. You know, I don't worry that, like, I'm not intimidated by the idea of writing a book, you know?
You feel you've conquered that fear?
Oh, well, I should hope so. 5 books later, yeah.
For if sure. If I haven't,
then I've got some problems that'll need more than this podcast to figure out.
Oh, boy.
But, yeah, I'm more confident in it. I have more fun with it, you know? You know, in some ways, I take it more seriously because, you know, this is something I want to be able to keep doing forever. You know, but in other ways, you know, it's you know, I don't take it so seriously because, you know, it's a story and, you know, it's important to me to write the story. But, you know, it's not the end of the world one way or the other. You know, in the story it might be, but for me personally, you know, you try it out and see how it goes, you know, see if it sticks. And if it doesn't, try something else.
What's been your progress so far with your books? What type of interaction you've seen? And have you been able to build yourself a community?
Yeah, I've been lucky that way. You know, I started out, well, I interact with a lot of people online, you know, whether through Facebook or Instagram, you know, like when I started out, because I'm a self-published author, I had no idea how to start. Like, what the heck do you do? And luckily, I signed up for this webinar with this romance writer, Alessandra Torre, who is just like a fantastic human being, because I've subsequently met her in real life, and she's great. But, you know, it was like this romance. She was giving like a best, she was a best New York Times bestseller. And she was offering this webinar about how to get started as an indie author. And I thought, hey, it's not what I want to write, but she must know what she's doing. So, you know, and she, you know, turned me on to the, like, there's whole groups on Facebook. It's all about writing and writers. And, you know, it never occurred to me that, like, people might use that particular medium that way. So I've been able to, you know, get a community online. I've also, in the last year and a half, started doing live events and, you know, like Comic Cons and, you know, go for the weekend and, you know, stand behind the table and see if I can sell a couple books. And, you know, what I found out, which I wasn't expecting, is the best part of the Comic Cons has literally nothing to do with selling books. It's meeting all the people, you know, like the creativity at a Comic Con with people's costumes,
anime,
just
amazing.
Off the hook. It's just crazy, you know, and everybody's just like there to have a good time. And, you know, and I'm at this, like, you know, sci-fi horror convention. It's like, oh my God, these are my people. You know, how did I not do this before? And so that's been very cool because, you know, sometimes I see people more than once, you know, or, you know, they'll tell me, oh, I, you know, I, I told my friend about, you know, your books and they really like them, or like just this past weekend, I was at a little conference called Living Dead Weekend. And it was all about Night of the Living Dead and George Romero stuff. And like they had the actors from the original Night of the Living Dead there, which was pretty cool.
Wow.
And this guy and I were talking, and so he, you know, bought the first two books in my new series. And I saw him out in the hallway and he was reading the book. And I said, "Oh, you already started?" And he said, "Oh yeah, I did. And I like it so far." And I was like, "Well, good." So before he left at the end of the day, he came back and he bought my other books, the whole series. And I was like, "Whoa." And he said, "I like what I'm reading and I know I'll like the rest." I was like, "Great, that's awesome. I mean, that makes me really happy." And then he comes in the next day and he says, 200 pages. That's how far I am. And I stayed up until 2 a.m.
Oh my God. Commitment.
I was like, you know what? That is the best compliment a writer could ever get. You know, it really is. And so, you know, regardless of whether or not, if he had bought the book online, I would never know that. I would never have had a chance to like to stand around and shoot the shit with him. I would never have been able to sit there and have him tell me all the things he thought were cool or that surprised him, or, you know, that he thought I was on the right track, or how he thought it tied into this larger trope or idea in the world of zombie fiction, which quite frankly, I never thought of. But hey, I'll take it, you know, so it's.
There's 1,001 ways of writing about zombies.
Seriously. But it's just been, you know, like that stuff is great, you know, and I mean, I just absolutely love that. I love meeting people and, you know, finding out, you know, why they're there and taking pictures with them with their costumes and I do sell books and that makes me happy, but it's literally not the thing that makes it awesome to do those kind of events. So I have been able to do a community, not just around my books, but also as a writer, you know, like my three writing besties, they're all out on the West Coast, you know, they're in, you know, Washington State and California, you know, and so that's cool. And I mean, I know writers from South Africa,
oh, wow. You know,
from Europe, all over Europe, you know, so that's cool too, you know, because, you know, I've been able to connect with them online and we'll work together trying to help each other promote, you know, each other's books and stuff. So you get to know people as you work on different projects with them. And that's really cool too. I mean, it's funny because the thing I never even thought about when I set out on this was the community that I would find, both with readers and with writers, you know. And, you know, I have found the writing community to be one that is unfailingly generous and kind, and people are so eager to share their knowledge with you. And, you know, when you first set out at this, you know, it's not a learning curve. It's like a cliff and you're standing there at the bottom of this cliff.
Preach, honey, preach.
You know, and it just seems so overwhelming. And then somebody throws a rope over, you know, and then 10 people throw ropes over. And so, you know, it's really cool. And, you know, I mean, if I never, ever, you know, were able to say, "Oh, I can, you know, make a living at this," or whatever, I would still do it because it's just been such a big, positive, wonderful addition to my life.
We, unfortunately, live in a world where there is a lot of misery because a lot of people are doing things that they don't want to do. You know, I can say for myself, I work a corporate job. I work a 9-to-5, but I do have a second job and I also do this. So I have two things a week that I get to look forward to. I get to be in a kitchen. I get to be around cool people. have fun experiences, and then also be able to do this, talk with you, have a great experience, learn something. I learned a lot so far now. But having that in your life doesn't matter. Money, like, it's like a drug. It's given to me.
Oh, yeah. And it's, and you know, I totally worked the whole 9-to-5 thing for years and, you know, did jobs that, you know, some I liked, some I didn't.
You know, part of life.
You know, some I liked the people and the place, but the work itself, you know, stick a fork in my eye. But, you know, that's the kind of, I mean, you know, that's, you gotta, like, you know, get through life. And, you know, I'm lucky enough now that, you know, my husband was like, look, you know, if you want to do this, just do it. I'll sell my soul and work the corporate job and make the money. And you take some time and really give this a go, because I think you can do it. You know, so I'm really lucky. Now, it's also dangerous because, you know, when you have only yourself to answer to, you know, that can get dangerous to get to. But so it's a bit of a balancing act.
Yeah, but that's also that's a level of trust that you have with somebody, you know, where you're telling them, like, look, I want you to be successful, so I'm going to do this because I want to see you successful. And I think that's the most powerful thing. Just having somebody that has your back when you need it. God.
Yeah. I mean, it really is a blessing, and like, just, I feel so lucky to have that in my life. And I know I am, because some people don't have that.
I know. And, you know, I feel, especially like as an artist or whatever type of artist that you are, having that sense of community, having that ability to communicate freely and be able to express, like, this is not an easy world to be in.
Mm-mm. It is not.
If you're a creative person, it's a fucking hard role. And you don't know what you're going to get. It may be a 6, it may be a 2, maybe just 3 and a 4. You never know. It's so unpredictable.
Well, and, you know, our society doesn't function in a way that feeds people's souls. You know, capitalist societies, they aren't about, you know, humane people first, you know, and so it's really hard to carve out those spaces where you get to do something that isn't about that, you know, and it can be hard when, you know, you're in a society that demands a level of conformity and you don't fit that shape. You know, you're a star shape, and you're a star peg and it's a square hole. I mean, you know,
it's not going to work.
No, it's not going to work. So, you know, you have to find those other places where you can get that.
And I think that one of the many benefits of the internet that has allowed us to do things what we're doing now, just the ability to communicate. And that's a really cool thing about Comic-Con and conventions and places for people to come together. It allows people to communicate in the best way. Yes, a lot of the time communication interaction is done through the internet. Mm-hmm. But sometimes those interactions lead to physical interactions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like, you know, two of my writing friends, the ones in California, we decided, we were just BSing online one day and about, like, oh, wouldn't it be great to have like get together and have a retreat, you know? And I was like, well, you know, I have a friend who has a cabin, you know, he might lend it to us. And I was just saying that I wasn't serious about it, because, you know, why would they want to come here to Pennsylvania, you know? And
hey, it's Dave. And I quickly just wanted to jump in and say, if you've been enjoying the podcast, enjoying this episode, if you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, that'll be so greatly appreciated. Because here's the thing. Someone might read that review and make the choice if they want to listen to the podcast. You get to help grow this podcast with us. How fucking cool is that? Let's jump back to today's episode.
And they were like, well, what's it like? So anyway, we ended up getting together. They both came to Pennsylvania. We went up to my friend's place for a week. He lent it to us for a week. And all of our husbands were like, you guys have never met in real life. Are you sure about this? Like, you're all going off for a week. And we were all like, yeah, it's going to be great, which it was. And yeah, but you get to do things like that, you know, or like, you know, that author I mentioned, Alessandra Torre, you know, she ended up putting together a writer conference, you know, a couple years after I started. And so I got to go to this writer conference and meet all these people. I got to meet her. And, you know, and so, you know, it can lead to these real life interactions, which, you know, just makes it even cooler, you know.
It is. And one of the things that we forget about that happened about 3 years ago was we didn't have interaction. Oh. We were behind screens. And the thing about humans is that we're not pairs. We're groups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, compared to other creatures, like, we're one of the only ones where we can come together as 100. And we're fine. You know,
yeah, we're herd animals.
We're a little different. Just a tiny bit.
But basically, you know, we really like to have to have others of us around. You know, it feels safer when you think about, you know, all the big, big wide world and all the things out there that might, you know, be dangerous or scary. You know, if you've got a couple people around, then it doesn't feel so bad.
Yeah, but like, think about it when you're in an apocalyptic. And imagine if there's a nuclear war, which, believe it or not, unfortunately, is very, you know, is possible. I mean,
it's
definitely possible. If a nuclear war happens and you happen to be in a small pocket and manage to survive, okay, and there's maybe 4-5 people in your group, now, there's no communication for miles. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have no idea what's going on around you. And, like, probably in your head, you're thinking you may be the last people alive.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even fathom that. I can't.
Well, see, I would think if I was in that situation that I really screwed up, because if that happens, I want to go out in the first strike, man. I do not want to be alive to live through all that nonsense. I mean, I live in a city, right on the edge of a city and major metropolitan area. And, you know, in addition to the many wonderful things I like about living in a city, you know, something like that happens, I'm going to get vaporized right off the bat. I don't have to deal with all that misery, which, you know, kind of maybe undercuts my credibility, but, you know, radiation and a life without Sudafed and, you know, that's just not my idea of a good time. Having to deal with spring allergies without Sudafed is my idea of hell.
Well, oh my God. Yeah. I mean, everything would be toxic. So you you wouldn't be able to use anything.
Oh no, no. No, I'd rather just go out that first wave.
Have you written an apocalyptic story during a nuclear war?
No, I have written a short story about a teenager and a plague that I'm actually going to. And ironically enough, I was writing this short story as COVID was breaking, you know, and as all that was coming out in the news, and it was weird. It was creepy as fuck.
Oh, I remember.
But like, here I am writing about a plague and this whole pandemic is like kicking off and nobody knows how bad it's going to be. And so, you know, so that's a story that, like, you know, so I wrote this little novella, you know, it's about, I don't know, 15,000 words long, and maybe not that long, maybe five, I don't know. But But, you know, after I finished that, I thought, man, you know, I could like actually make a book out of this. Like I could make a whole trilogy, you know, around this whole theme and this kid. And so I will, I've got it, you know, roughly thought out in my head and I'm hoping to, I'll get started on that when I finish this, the current series I'm working on. So
it's a lot. No,
not nuclear war. That's well, and you know what else too?
What?
Is like the reason I like zombies and I like plagues and stuff is I am not a big research person. Okay. You know, I mean like EMP stuff is really big right now. And like, it's cool. It's interesting, but you know what? I don't want to spend my time doing a lot of research, you know, about all the ins and outs of an EMP and Faraday cages and this and that and the other and what will work and what won't work, you know, and I don't want to like spend my time trying to, you know, having to do all this research about, you know, like radiation sickness and, you know, just, you know, how far out you have to be to survive it. I don't want to do that. You know, I'm kind of lazy that way. You know, like I'll do the research I need to do, but like, I don't want to have to like get into something where like, if I get it wrong, people are going to be like, dude, you got it wrong. And they will, trust me. Like the people who read the EMP stuff, they know this stuff. And the people who read nuclear apocalypse books, they know. And, you know, so I just,
I mean,
you know,
they're prepared when it happens.
Well, whether they're prepared or not, they're going to be very ready to tell you that you don't know what the heck you're doing. And they wasted, you know, $3 to have you not know what you're doing, you know?
Oh my God.
So that's another thing. Whereas, you know, plagues and zombies, you know, that's very, well, I mean, zombies that, I mean, they're just the ultimate because you can just make it whatever you want it to be.
You know, it's funny. Because in real life, there is a zombie disease. It's called rabies.
Well, yeah, but they don't, once they die, they don't get back up and.
I know that, but just like imagine, like there's, that's the thing about zombies. That's what I was saying earlier. Like there's 1,001 ways of making zombies. Like you don't have to be, nobody gives a fuck if you're accurate with zombies. Come on. Exactly.
No. The big debate is, you know, fast versus slow zombies. You know, that's the big thing. But, you know, you can make it whatever you want, you know. And so, you know, and that's one of the things I like about, you know, sci-fi and to an extent, you know, like hard science fiction. Okay, you got to, you know, do some things right. But, you know, with a lot of things, it's very elastic and there's a lot of wiggle room to play with things and make them different. So it's good stuff.
Yeah. And I kind of love that kind of character line and play because you really get to see another, you know, not everything that you're reading has to necessarily be real.
Oh yeah, I agree.
Sometimes, you know, there's a reason why we have fiction and nonfiction, you know, and there is great literature that has a lot of research in it. And I really appreciate you bringing up this point. You don't always need to be a great writer with tons of research. You could be a great writer with less research, or you have your focus on other things that give you creativity to write.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I have friends who like, they love to do that research. They love to go down that rabbit hole and spend the time and do it. And they're like, I love research. And I'm just like, oh God, you know, that's just not my idea of a good time.
No. To each their own, honey.
That in school, you know, I don't want to have to keep doing it now.
What type of inspirations? You know, you've touched on this earlier, but, you know, with your books, I know that you mentioned that you got inspired by the place that you're in, the place that you were in California. But were there other things that gave you inspiration with your writing?
Well, one of the things I like about the zombie genre, and not everybody does this, but, you know, George Romero in Night of the Living Dead, he was he always incorporated social commentary into his movies, you know?
Can you elaborate on that?
Well, you know, in 1968, the hero was a black man in Night of the Living Dead, and he was, you know, trying to escape from zombies with a white woman. You know, you didn't have a lot of black men or women being the hero or the heroine of a film. You didn't have them calling the shots like the character of Ben does in Night of the Living Dead. You know, in Dawn of the Dead, you know, like the film starts out at a race riot, you know, and in the opening scene, you're dealing with, you know, Cuban separatists who are fighting against the police who are beating people up indiscriminately. So he's got like politics, you know, because at the time in the early 80s, you know, there were a lot of different separatist movements in the 70s and 80s, like the American Indian movement and the move. I can't think of what it stands for.
There was
for,
a lot of movements.
There were tons of movements, you know, and so he's got like, you know, racism. He's got racism. He's got, you know, police brutality all right there in the first couple minutes of this zombie movie, you know, and also like in his, like in Night of the Living Dead, and you know, the movie's like 55 years old, so it's very of its time. The women are kind of passive, you know, they don't really have much agency, but by the time he made, you know, Dawn of the Dead, he had the women's movement had happened, and you know, the main female character, like, she's right in there. She is demanding to be taken seriously and to have an equal voice in things. So, right. you know, and she's got a lot of agency over what's going to happen to her. Like, she's not waiting around for somebody to save her. So, you know, so he did that. And social commentary is something I love, you know, and when it's done right, the people who like social commentary see it and they recognize it and they can enjoy it. And the people who don't notice it, they can still enjoy the book too. And sometimes people don't like it and they won't read your book anymore. And that's okay. You know, my book doesn't have to be for everybody and they don't have to like every book. But, you know, so like when I was writing The Undead Age, I was, you know, thinking about things like the iniquities in healthcare access in American society. And, you know, and that's why I had a society where there was a cure for the zombie virus, but you couldn't necessarily get it, you know, like healthcare in the United States. We can treat a lot of things, but
long podcast on that. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, just, you know, things like that. I was kind of like, and the idea of like, you know, groups that have a lot of power and how they treat people and how their basic orientation, whatever they're organized around, can make them, you know, a positive thing or a negative thing. So you know, so that's one of the things, that was another thing that was an inspiration for me, is just, you know, having this subtext woven in there. So
yeah, I like that. I mean, it adds a deeper element to it. Something that comes to mind is Alien. I love mm-hmm. Alien. It's one of my favorite yeah. movies. And in a way, it does have a social commentary, because if you think about it, any one of us watching that film could have been on that spacecraft.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, any one of us. They look just like us, and they had to experience that terror. And just imagining her running around the craft, like not even knowing if she's going to make it, and you mm-hmm. feeling just the humanity inside of her, that like she's been put into this position. It's so of its time, but it's still so modern.
Well, and you know, and not just that she's feeling this terror, but they were sent there by the company.
Yeah.
Because the company sensed an opportunity to make money. And their whole point was like, well, we don't care what happens to the crew. They're expendable, you know? And because
she realizes that in the end of the film, I remember.
Yeah. When it says, what about the crew? Expendable, you know, and, you know, and so, you know, that was, I mean, that was a very stark commentary on our society. And those kind of themes are still being made, you know, they're still being explored.
They're still relevant, you know, they're still important to explore. And it's the way, I guess the, not the in-depth, but I guess the way that it's presented, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Alien is also your classic haunted house, when you think about it. People trapped in a remote location with a monster or a ghost or whatever. I mean, it's that trope, you know? And this house just happens to be in space, you know?
Right.
And this monster just happens to be an alien, you know? So, you know, it's fun stuff.
Well, I was going to ask you, you know, for anybody that's listening, they want to find your books, kind of interact with the work that you're doing, maybe possibly bump into you at a Comic-Con. Where can they find you, you know, and all that jazz.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I've got a website. It's www.amgeever. That's G as in George, E, V as in Victor, E-R, .com. I am on Facebook and Instagram at the same amgeever. My books are sold everywhere, so you can find them on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Apple, Kobo, Google. You can probably find them other places. I've got some audio, the first two Undead Age books. So, you know, if you like audio, you can get my stuff at the library. If your library doesn't have it, ask the librarian, you know, especially for ebooks, they'll usually get them for you. And then as far as Comic Cons, I'm not sure. I don't have anything planned for the rest of the year. I'm probably going to go to Steel City Con here in Pittsburgh next April. But I haven't really thought about next year and what I'm going to do, though I would like to do more live events than I did this year.
Nice. Well, that's awesome. I mean, it's a great way to connect and got a website.
Oh, it's awesome.
So everything's in one place.
Yeah, everything's at the website. And I have my own store, too. So if people, you know, want to support me directly, which is great because, you know, I get a larger cut of the money versus, you know, 30% at one place or 50% at another.
Right.
You know, so, you know, artists always appreciate if you support them directly.
Of course.
As you know.
Yeah, I will listen. And it's also a great way to interact and always learn more. You know, one of the best ways to start your creative journey is with the first click.
Yeah,
like and subscribe.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, with that, you know, if you want to learn more about the podcast, you can find us on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube at Lost in the Groove Pod. So with that, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on. This will catch you on the next one.
All right. Thank you. Have a great time.
All right. Bye.